the same rap songs. Every new hit should sing along. Rap is so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. It's like they took the art form. I'm tired of the same rap songs.
Good evening, this is Sean P.
This is Big Root, and we are the brothers. Coming to you live from the Boogie Down Bronx. Bringing you another late night episode. This is when we got into the recording session studio booth to bring today's topic, reparations. Yes, indeed, my brother. So that term has been with us as a community and in the national conversation for over 150 years, basically, after the Civil War. And yet it's never been implemented in any meaningful way, any legal, logical way. But it's in the news again very recently, so we decided to dive into the topic. Big Root, what is your overall familiarity with reparations?
I think originally when people were freed from slavery, there was supposed to be a promise of 40 acres and a mule for each person that was put into slavery against their will. And of course, that never came to fruition.
Exactly. And like many things in the world, it becomes ironic how you need to address something in the immediate. Like, for example, if there's a fire, you need to kind of pay off the people who, you know, suffer the loss of the fire as quick as possible, as opposed to sitting it for 30 years and countless new people rebuild the house, and the house is sold 3 and 4 times, and you're trying to find the original owners, and then other people come in there and say, oh, but when I moved in, the house was in this situation and this and this, and they, everybody's saying that they're owed money, and it's just so much harder at that point. So the reason I say that is we're having a conversation 150 years plus later. It's a conversation that is so fragmented for so many reasons, right? There's so many people that can say they qualify or that they should be eligible for it. And the truth of the matter is this was supposed to have been done 150 years ago to the people that were directly affected by the institution of slavery.
That's true. I mean, this is something that should, like you said, should have been handled in a timely fashion. And now it's going to be, you know, a much bigger job to decide who gets what.
Exactly. And so that is a challenge. That's why, again, today's topic, reparations, we put a question mark with it, right? And not a question mark, is it deserved? But how would it work, right? Because I think it's like any implementation of something. The idea is one thing, right? But how does it actually work? I mean, you know, what's the right number? Who's eligible? How do you pay it out? These things might seem to be intangible, but they're the most tangible aspect of it, right? I mean, how do you pay people back if you don't know the process in which you would pay them back and who these people are?
Exactly. And who qualifies, like you said, for what?
Exactly. So I think the main reason why it resurfaced very recently in the news is that the city of San Francisco, California, apparently has members of the city council who have brought the initiative to the floor. And apparently they have a set of, basically they've made reparations a major focal point of this particular session that they're having, I guess you could say like this year. Right. So not something they're theoretically talking about. They're basically trying to plan how to do it. And I think some of the benefits of their reparation plan was going to be that I believe, I don't have the information in front of me, but every black person would get $5 million. They would have the right to buy a home for $1. They would get, I believe it was $250,000 for life. I could be wrong, but I think that was one of it. And there was one other major factor that I think was mentioned. Now, I'm going to ask you, how does that sound to you, just based on a real-world sense?
Well, in a real-world sense, it seems unrealistic based on how many people would qualify, and do you have unlimited resources, and where is this money coming from? And again, who's selling the house for a dollar? Because is this property owned by the city or state, or is it you're just going to eminent domain somebody's property and give it to somebody else for a dollar?
Those are all really great points, right? Because you're right. How can you give away things that you don't have? How can you acquire things to give away that you don't necessarily have access to, right? So I know one of the theories I heard about this was that their plan or their intent with the plan was simply to draw attention to it, bring attention to it, right? Not a real world scenario. We have the resources to hand this out, but we're going to make it so over the top that the conversation has to be had.
The problem with this country, in my mind, you can always start and debate, start debates and topics and have conversations. Doesn't mean something's actually going to happen or it's going to be, you know, seen to fruition.
Well, that's true. That's true. And I mean, again, we're talking about a conversation that started over 150 years ago and is kind of in the same place. So, I mean, it does resurface every so often. Some people, it's always front and center, and there's some people just saying it should always be and we have to get it done. Other people kind of look at it like it's a pipe dream. It's never going to actually happen. And then you have people in the middle who say, well, let's try this or let's talk about this. And like you said, it doesn't go anywhere, but I guess their intent is for it to go someplace. So going back to the premise of it now, right, does the city of San Francisco have $5 million to give to every black citizen, assuming that's what they say, resident, by the way, not citizen, every resident of San Francisco, assuming that every resident is eligible? Like, in other words, is it simply a matter of if you're black and live in San Francisco, you get the money? Is there a certain criteria while being black in San Francisco that would make you eligible for the money? But again, do they have that much money? That's the first premise, right? Like, okay, if you're going to give people something, do you have it to give?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they were planning on getting this money from their rich Silicon Valley residents. Like you said, we don't know if they have enough money. Number two, what are the qualifications? I could go run to move San Francisco tomorrow. Do I qualify to get the money if I move there? You know, so again, that's be some type of qualifications that people have to meet to get this money. And they should know how much money they need to have in general, what they're looking at, because it's like you're trying to say you're an insurance company. You have to know that you have enough resources to pay off all your different clients, or what's the point of having insurance?
Exactly. So I think the reason why this is so hard, and let's just start with the real premise, there's a lot of people that just don't want to pay, right? Like, there's a lot of people that, even if the money was there, even if they could identify who should be eligible to receive it, I just don't want to pay. I don't want to do it. So there's always going to be that element of it, number one, right? Which we can always go back to the beginning of the 150 years after the Civil War when the conversation was happening, because that's when it needed to happen. That's the whole point. When someone is in a grief party, you try to make sure that you make them whole as quick as possible, right? And you try to do it before it becomes murky, not their great-great-grandkids, not their distant relatives, them, right? I did you an injustice. I'm trying to pay you back. And so that is one factor, just the complexity of waiting. Or no, just the complexity of not wanting to, right? Because the biggest reason that we probably haven't seen reparations in this country is this is not a desire to actually pay it out.
What's going on, man? I don't understand it. I want something good to listen to. I demand it. All the real artists on another planet. And me, I'm the last MC still standing.
So I guess we're saying if you get over that initial hump, right? Let's say the United States Congress voted 100 senators to zero to do this. We decided we screwed up. Slavery was wrong. We want to do it. What would the next steps be? And I'm assuming the House is on board as well. This is an unrealistic scenario, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, how I was going to say very unrealistic.
Right. But the thing is, it might actually take that. Like, this might actually be one of those things where the bar is higher than the requirement for an amendment, right? You know, it's a big requirement of Congress. So many high numbers have to be met for an amendment to go through, right? And this is probably higher than that. That's the point. This is probably really, really hard to do. So Yeah, I guess let's say we get over the hump of wanting to do it, right? Because if you don't want to do it, it's not going to happen. We can just leave it right there, right? 150 years from now, people like us can be having the same conversation. Yeah, we should get reparations. It's, now it's about 300 years later, right? So if you didn't get it when you were supposed to get it, you didn't get it 150 years later, is there any real expectation you would get it 150 years after that?
I do not think so. I think that that ship would have sailed and you definitely are not getting any type of compensation.
Exactly. So again, for our listeners, this is a broad topic. I mean, I think if you just casually ask black people, if you just were to do a poll on the street, what do you think about reparations? I think most people are going to say, yeah, we deserve it. We should get it. I'd like it and all those things, which is not really a scientific way of processing it, right? So we're trying to bring it back to a logical, procedural way of doing it, if it was doable. That's why I said, let's assume there was a desire from Congress to do this, right? Let's say the American electorate voted on election day that, yes, we want black people to get reparations. And it was like in the 80, 90 percentiles, the majority of the country wants it. Fine. Then we've crossed the hurdle of, do we want to do this, right? So I think the next hurdle would be, how do we do this?
Well, you'd have to determine who are the aggrieved parties and who qualifies for it. So would it be, do you have to show papers that, you know, you're descendants of slaves? I mean, I'm not sure what they would consider to be who's going to qualify for it. But that's the first thing you'd have to do.
That's a good point. And I think that's, it's a hard one, but I think that is the main one, right? Now that we determine we want to pay back the grief parties, how do we determine who the grief parties are, as you said? And because we're talking about 150 years later, where there have been so much expansion of the grief parties, or in a different way, you could say a diffusion of the grief parties, right? Because again, that was the whole point. If you would have did it to the grief parties, to the former slaves, and you would have gave them their 40 acres and their mule, that would have been it. You would have given it to them at the time. You'd have known who you're giving it to, and they would have benefited from it, right? So this wait-and-see policy is why we are where we are. I guess another point to that would be, it could there be a graded status to it where some people get grade A reparations, right? In other words, my great-great-great-grandfather, mother was, you know, descendant of, was a slave, and I have the papers to prove it. Right, because there are people who live on the same land that their ancestors were slaves on. So, I mean, there are people that are that closely connected to slavery, and therefore reparations should be front and center. And then there are people that are very far removed from it, but does that mean that they should get nothing? Should it be all or nothing, or should it be that there's grades of reparation?
Well, I think it's really number one that it would be a city like San Francisco that would be even considering something like this, because obviously when did people start moving out west, number one? So how many people who survived slavery moved to California, and when did they move to California? So again, those are all going to be things that's going to help to determine who qualifies for any type of reparations. But the pool might be a lot smaller than we think, because it's not like, say, you're talking about Georgia or, you know, Virginia, you know, parts of the country where people were enslaved a lot longer than people out west.
Very true. Very true. And I think San Francisco represents a very interesting example, right? Because you make a good point that what is their connection to the original institution of slavery in the South? I mean, San Francisco didn't exist at that point, as far as I know. But furthermore, they represent, on the other end, a locality where at least the city council wants to do it. So they meet the first hurdle that we were talking about, right? The desire to provide reparations. So again, they're like a good dichotomy, right? What do you have to do with slavery? What's your history to slavery? But we want to pay back reparations, right? So again, if we can merge those two. So now let's say we have a municipality, a state, and or the whole country where we're acknowledging that we were part of the institution of slavery. We know who the grief parties are. Well, we don't. We don't know who the grief parties are, but we're responsible for slavery, and we want to pay them back. that goes back to hurdle number two, which you said is how do you determine who you pay?
Well, I guess you determine who you pay based on were they living in the area or can prove that their ancestors were living in the area during the time that, you know, they should be due reparations.
Agreed. And then that's when I introduced the idea of graded reparations where somebody, I mean, let's just use a $5 million example, right? If you're grade A, you get $5 million. If you're grade B, maybe you get $1 million. If you're grade C, maybe you get $500,000. Being that, you know, it shouldn't necessarily be all or nothing, right? Because if you do have some kind of connection, but it's not as strong. Say both of your parents, or say four of your ancestors, your grandparents on both sides, let's say, were, you know, slaves, then you get grade A. You know, I'm just saying at some point you need to come up with a formula, like you said, to determine. And maybe it shouldn't be all or nothing, right? Because, you know, maybe some people have a stronger connection than others, but they still have a connection. So I guess you'd have to determine a formula based on your second hurdle of how do we determine who should get this money and how much they should get.
No, you're right. You know, I'm just thinking about what you're saying. And most people only have their own birth certificate. They don't have information about their parents or grandparents. So I don't know how they're going to go back 150 years to show that they might be direct descendants of slaves.
I don't know either, but the reason why we're saying that's so important is because whenever the conversation comes up, so many people seem to feel that they are entitled, right? Like, I should have gotten it before. I should have long had it. And like we're saying, there's no proof you're entitled now today. So what do you mean you should have gotten it, right? What makes you entitled? Is just being Black in America makes you entitled? I think for a lot of people, that's the thought process. You know, I'm here and I'm Black. I think it's a little bit more than that. But for a lot of people, it seems that, why would it be more than that? Why wouldn't I get reparations?
Tired of the same rap songs. Uh-huh. Every new hit should sing along. Yeah. Rap is so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. It's like they took the art form. I'm tired of the same rap songs.
Yeah, I think there's a misinformed premise of most Black people that I'm only here because you brought my ancestors here. So whether or not they were actually enslaved, I deserve money because I'm in this country now. And probably that's not the way that's going to be determined. But in their mind, that's what they're thinking.
True. And to your point for our listeners, I think we're trying to say, should that be their thinking, right? Or is their thinking wrong? Because what we want and what we're owed are two different things, right? We may want everything. We may be owed nothing, right? So I think that's the point we're saying. There needs to be, assuming this was to move forward in a realistic way, there doesn't need to be a logical process. I had a conversation with a friend the other day, and I guess he went into the social media waters, which you should never go into because it always leaves you very wet. Mm-hmm. And I guess a man of Asian descent was, reacted negatively to this news because he's like, I didn't come to this country to pay, you know, for other people. Right. And I guess my friend took issue with that. And again, in the social media waters, you know how that stuff goes. But I think that brought up a really good point. Right. The money has to come from someplace. Generally, it comes from taxpayers. Right. So generally, Americans would be paying other Americans. Not the most insane concept being that Americans got free labor from other Americans, right? So we can see that there's a symmetry there, but you can see, again, 150 years later, people that had nothing to do with the original institution of it, right? Why am I paying for it now? Why am I on the line to pay these people back when I had nothing to do with it, or nor did I necessarily gain the benefits of it?
Well, one could argue that if you're not African-American and if you're of Caucasian descent, you already on third base because you're a Caucasian and you did benefit from it. So even though you didn't personally get money, you have privilege that you don't, even though you normally don't get when you're African-American or Latino.
Right, but this wasn't Caucasian, this was an Asian. A man of Asian descent.
Okay, well, no one's saying that he's supposed to be paying for it. I mean, obviously, if it's coming from the whole American government, then, yeah, that's I guess, part of the taxpayers' money that's going into it. But again, the country was built on minority labor. So, I mean, whether you personally did it or not, you're still benefiting from what was the labor that was on the, you know, used to build this country.
Okay. But that goes back to hurdle number three, right? Hurdle number one, do we want to pay? Hurdle number two, who do we know to who to pay? And hurdle number three, where do we find the money to pay, right? Because it's easy to write checks. But if we don't have money in that account, the checks bounce, right? So, again, we're just trying to put a logical plan in place for how reparations could work. Because, yes, right, you're right, you may be on the line for it. Even though, again, as we said offline, if the situation was reversed and we had to pay another group of people for something we didn't do, we probably have a very different mindset and attitude towards it. So I just think that, again, when you're looking to get something, you feel a certain way. When you're the one who has to give something, you tend to feel a different way.
No, I agree. And I also agree with, like you said, going on to social media, that's not the best place to look for solutions to ideas or putting your opinions out there, because it's very vicious out there.
Exactly. And you know me, I try to stay out of those waters, boy. I don't want to get wet. So I try to stay out of those waters. But so regarding the conversation, though, when it was brought to me, it actually did have me, you know, come with an idea or at least a framework, again, to share with our listeners tonight's episode of Reparations. I guess what I was telling my friend was that not everybody feels everybody else's pain, right? But most people understand the concept of fairness. And the reason I say that, most people, if you go to work for a week and you don't get paid, you feel like you got cheated, right? And if we apply that concept across the board, we understand that, okay, you know, everyone's supposed to get paid for the work that they do. So that being said, as you said, even when you join a system, society, a company, any of those institutions, you understand fairness. If I work, I get paid. If they work, they should get paid. So if we kind of break away from the identity of the politics, right, of the situation, and focus on the fairness of it, right, the fairness of it, there are people who are not compensated, and it's only fair to compensate them. Then we get over hurdle number one. It's not whether or not we want to do it. We should do it because we weren't being fair. You get over hurdle number two. We have to find who these people are so we can make them whole. And you get over hurdle number three. We're going to take some of our existing resources to pay off our existing debt, right? Because now it's about fairness. Now it's not about desire or interest. It's fair, right? People working, they're supposed to get paid. So I think that conversation kind of took the conversation there where, like you said, once you became a worker in America and your taxes are being taken, you don't have control where the taxes money's going to go. Right. That's just part of being in the system. Not so much that you benefit from it. You're just part of the system. You came here. You decided to be part of America. If this is something that America has to do, then you have to be a part of that.
No, I agree with that, because, again, you may not agree with military spending or whatever, but once you pay your taxes, the government's going to allocate where the money needs to go.
Exactly. And it's just a matter of fairness. You might say, I don't think it's fair. We're not asking you, right? You're part of our electorate. You're part of our working class system. We take your taxes and we build roads and we fund schools, we fund the military. So, right, if we take it from that point of view of fairness now, right, now we're kind of putting more of a structure in place of, okay, we have an unwritten debt, right? We should have paid this debt off when it was smaller and easier to manage, but we still have the debt and we still have to pay it off. So I think if we look at reparations from that prism, right, it's an unpaid debt the United States of America is still responsible for, and it needs to find the people that can help it pay it off. Now you can see a plan come together that's fair, right? It's not emotionally driven. It's not redemptive. It's what it is, right? It's paying off a debt.
Yeah, I think when you take it from that point of view, you may find more people who find it more palatable.
Good. Because that's probably where we're going with it, you know. Again, some people would celebrate it, some people would hate it. But I think, you know, when we look at it from a fair, equitable lens, most decent people want to be fair. So I guess that's a framework that we can implement. So maybe they should hire us and have us do it, right? This is kind of the area where it is now. Like you said, is San Francisco serious? Is it going to garner national attention? I mean, the country is so divisive right now. I don't know if now is the right time to have the conversation when we're trying to keep the democracy going, right? I don't know if you want to add the weight of reparations to it. But since it is in the news, we did want to have this topic tonight.
Yeah, like I was saying earlier, they may be the ones to introduce it because they may feel that the percentage of people they have that would qualify might be very, very small. And, you know, we couldn't talk about it because we're not really going to be the state that would have a large population looking to claim this.
True, true. And again, they may have their own particular interest to do it, like you said. But I think by introducing the conversation, we know from legal precedents that sometimes whatever cases that someplace else, if it works itself through the entire legal system, it does become the law of the land, right? So it can be something that starts small and grows. But ultimately, I think as we've gone through the topic tonight, we've shown that as a matter of fairness and indebtedness, right, there are times you have to pay what you owe, right? It's not whether you want to. It's the right thing to do. You owe something, you're supposed to pay it off. So I think that's probably the best way to frame the argument. I do know that African Americans suffer greatly in this country in a variety of ways. We've covered it in many episodes. We know the criminal injustice system is what we tend to deal with, where we don't get treated fairly. But this is just a different prism where we're looking for fairness, right? We're not looking for payback. We're not looking for a handout. We're looking for debt that the country owes to a segment of the society that is never paid.
What's going on, man? I don't understand it. I want something good to listen to. I demand it. All the real artists on another planet. And me, I'm the last MC still standing.
Well said.
So, before we, I guess, close out and, you know, go to call to actions, I remember having this conversation several years ago with a former coworker of mine, ironically enough, a young Caucasian individual, a young white male. And he actually had one of the best ideas I'd ever heard. And his idea was simple. Black people in this country, and I believe he was referring to all black people in this country because of the difficulty in determining who's eligible, black people in this country should not pay taxes. And I thought that was a brilliant idea because it went over the first hurdle of, do we want to pay back? Because if we can get to that hurdle, we say, yeah, we want to pay back. How do we do it? Simple. Why don't we pay taxes? White people. So you've decided to do it. You've determined who's eligible, and you determine how you would fund it. Simple. We're not giving you anything other than you no longer have to pay federal, possibly state income tax.
Oh, that's a good way to, a good start. You know, I don't know how that would be good for the people who normally just get money back and don't pay taxes to begin with anyway, but I'm sure that's a good start.
Well, I guess it is a good start, and this is where economists and other people would have to get in and see, okay, is that too much of a... Is the aggrieved party leaving too much on the table? Because we do know that when you settle out of court sometimes, you only get a fraction or fragment of what you hope to get or may actually get if you go to trial or whatever. So again, it could be leaving a lot on the table, or it could be a way of combining all these hurdles, hopping over them, bam, it's done. Reparations is provided. So I think I liked it. And again, we were just having our own private conversation, and it just came out of that. But I think I liked it because it was simple. And again, going back to the principle of fairness, it was fair. It was fair. We're just giving these people what they owe. Which people? Black people. Why? Because we should have did it 150 years ago. didn't. People moved all over the place, and it's easy to say, "Oh, well, what plantation were you on?" Really, you asked me that 150 years later, and I think that was his premise. Like, okay, that's going to be so hard to unwind and unfigure out, or whatever. This is easier. This is fair. So that's the only reason I brought it out there. It's just a fair solution.
No, it's a fair solution. I mean, the problem I would have with it is that, one, we tend to make lower salaries than most other people. So fine, we're not paying taxes, but is that really compensation for being enslaved? Like you said, it's a good start. So it's something definitely to consider. But I don't know if the majority of people would feel that as adequate compensation. That's just a good start.
Okay, and I'll take that. And I guess my main thing is, again, if we were to put a structure to it, is it going to be what the people want, right? Because we talked about, like you said, the 9/11 commission, not the 9/11 commission. You remember the movie where they explained the process in which they paid out,
compensation funds.
Compensation funds, right. And again, there was no quote unquote fair way to do it. There was nothing that existed at the time. He had to come up with a plan to just do it. So I think this is a plan to possibly do it. And this goes back to what I said, there may be a greater system. Maybe some people get more than just, tax-free income. But maybe tax-free income is like the baseline. So everybody who's African-American gets that, because there's so many other injustices in this country that are connected to slavery, but not slavery, right? So that's just to put that particular idea out there, because I guess the reason I mentioned it is it might not be as hard as we think if we really commit to doing it.
No, I agree. And like I said, it's definitely a good start in the conversation. So that's something to keep under advisement.
Okay. All right. So I think we did definitely cover the topic pretty well, being that we're not experts on reparations either, but it definitely is in the news, and it was something that we wanted to share to listeners tonight. So I guess we can finish up as we always do with a call to action for tonight's episode, reparations.
Well, I think a call to action for the parties that may receive reparations or some type of monetary gift is, what would you do with it? Because it's not just good enough to get that money and to squander it on jewelry and other, non-appreciable things. Are you going to invest it? Are you going to use it towards education? Are you going to leave it, be able to make it grow? So I would think that those that may be in line to receive that additional money, to look at ways that they're going to be able to multiply it, not just take it and squander it.
Well said. Well said. That is an incredible call to action. So I definitely hope our listeners really gravitate towards it, because you're right. Let's say this thing does go through and becomes a reality. Are you prepared to take advantage of it, or are you just going to squander it? So I think that's an incredible call to action. My call to action would simply be, again, as always, to increase your awareness in this area, right? Maybe the more we read and the more we discuss this idea and share these ideas, maybe more ideas and plans will come to the surface that are realistic. Okay, no, I'm not going to get, $5 million. No, I'm not going to buy a house for a dollar, right? But maybe I will get $300,000, and to your point, what would I do with it and how would I best use it? So again, I think it's something where following up your call to action of being prepared and financially aware to take advantage of any reparations monies that may come, it's what can we do to move this conversation forward collectively, making it an interest, not a joke, not just talking about it. What can we do to further the conversation, and by that is just being more aware of it, and again, more involved in the political process and everything else. So that's my call to action, just to learn more about reparations.
great. It's a great idea. And definitely something people should take to heart.
Definitely. Thank you. And I think yours is spot on, because if somehow through a miracle this was to happen and we squandered it, it would be worse than never getting it. So I definitely love your call to action, and hopefully our listeners will gravitate towards just being more financially aware.
Amen to that.
Well, for tonight's episode of Reparations, I am Sean P.
I'm Big Root.
And we are the brothers.
Peace out.
I'm tired of the same rap songs. Every new hit, sing along. Rappers so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. It's like they took the art out the art form. What's going on, man? I don't understand it. I want something good to listen to. I demand it. All the real artists on another planet. And me, I'm the last MC still standing.